Welcome back to the Goal Line Stand, where it is all football all the time. A Sports Talk Philly partner, sportstalkphilly.com, coming on September 3rd to Sports Wire Radio. Presented as always by Michael's Glass Company, 215-338-3293. Up in Northeast Philadelphia, DePaul's Table, 7 East Lancaster Avenue in Ardmore. Follow us everywhere on social at GL Stand Show. We will have links to this in the show notes. I am Mike. I am joined, as always, by Brett. And Brett, they should have given Jalen Hurts some Imodium. Maybe it was the dancing pregame that got his tummy all messed up and he had to leave.
That was a little strange. He definitely looked good in warmups and apparently was rushed to the hospital.
The moves were a little off. He kind of, you know, almost looked like an Elaine Bennis kind of thing at points. But yeah, having to get rushed to the hospital is concerning. That tells me maybe they thought maybe like an appendix or something like that.
Yeah.
Type deal. Whatever it is, I you know, maybe they gave him some Gas X. Now, what are they feeding these guys? I guess that's the big key. Look, I can remember back in the day. This is many, many years ago now. You know, they used to have those gold cards that they would give out as a fundraiser in high school.
Yes.
So one of the ones we had was buy one double cheeseburger at Burger King, get the second one free. A bunch of us idiot linemen, so this would be 1999-2000, thought it would have been a good idea to go pre-scrimmage against Camden High. Let's just go to Burger King and get, like, each of us will get four double cheeseburgers and then go try to play the high on said cheeseburgers.
Yeah.
Did not work out very well.
Well, you know, I'm not a one-upper, unlike others we've known in the past, but I do have one I think that might trump that, which was when I was a junior at Cherry Hill East, the seniors on the team thought, how can we collectively figure out a way to naturally end practice in a training camp? So somehow they all ended up in my house. Then the whole team ended up in my house, and we had a wing night and ordered over 2,500 wings from a local wing establishment. And the goal was that everyone would collectively, around the same time the next day, I guess, develop stomach issues. That didn't really happen. It was just another bad practice. But we did create wing night for the next night, next year as well. So there's that.
Wings are always good, too.
Wings are always good, although it was funny when you were just trying to eat all those wings. There were so many. Our basement smelled like hot sauce for several weeks. And for whatever reason, everyone's like, you know, I think we should eat some pizza to flush down the wings.
Great idea. Sounds
yeah, wonderful. It was tremendous, yes. Jalen it was rather Hurts, gluttonous.
Jalen Hurts misses the game due to stomach issues. I guess it doesn't really matter anyway, though, because the Eagles starters, for the most part, weren't going to be playing anyway, which is a little odd. This goes back to our previous episode that dropped on Wednesday. You can go back and listen to it. Down number three of our true and false, where I had said to you, true or false, joint practices at this juncture are more of a litmus test than a preseason game. And we both agreed false slightly. I don't know, man. Maybe last night changes the whole equation. Apparently, that was the thought process from Nick Sirianni in the joint practices with the Patriots. He was able to do more, open the playbook up more, and therefore he didn't need to have the starters play.
Yeah, that appears to be the new modus operandi across the league, as a lot of teams are planning this weekend who conducted joint practices. They're planning to take the course of action that the Eagles did.
So here's the problem with that, not from an on-field perspective, but this is a business. We know that. How, as a business owner, the National Football League, the Philadelphia Eagle Football Club, Can you do that without announcing it? Because you're in a situation where, say what we will about the pandemic and the situation, you know, it is what it is. Why don't you get your shot if you can? Because you never know what the hell is going to happen. Never mind. Turn off the mic, goddammit. Stop talking. You have people who want to go to these games. Preseason games were always, in my family, as an Eagle season ticket holder, were the opportunity to take the kids to the game.
Yeah.
Because it meant nothing. And I can't tell you how many preseason games I went to at my sister's, and it would drive me insane. But, you know, now you have a situation where you expect to see Jalen Hurts for a series or two or three at this point, and he's not playing. Forget the shits. You know, the Eagles should be announcing that, saying, hey, look, we're not playing our guys.
I agree, but I think, you know, speaking of things we discussed last episode, we did mention the term vestigial organs. I think preseason games are essentially going to become vestigial organs. Keep in mind, the league is going to be moving to an 18-game schedule, so at some point we're going to be only having two preseason games. It's still going to be a little bit of a money grab. You're going to have people who season ticket holders will resell their tickets on secondary markets, and people who normally do not have the opportunity to come to games will still want to come to games simply to experience what it's like to go to a game. Or, as you said, it's the opportunity to bring family members who aren't typically allowed, like in my family, my mother. It's just that's what preseason games are. And I think, yes, it's not going to be as exciting because you're not going to have as much with starters. But in the end of the day, I don't think it really affects the bottom line too much of the NFL if the preseason is entertaining or not.
No, it doesn't, but you're still, it's just from a fan standpoint. This goes back to point number four, or down number four of our true false. Maybe this is an exact reason to go play a game at a Franklin Field, a Yale Bowl, wherever.
I still think that would be a great idea. All options should be on the table. Either way, preseason, it's clear, is going to become less and less important. Preseason games, not preseason.
Devonta Smith makes his Eagles debut, couple drops, but overall looked fairly decent. Again, it's with the second teamers. It's hard to tell. All reports are that he looked solid in practice, hence why he was able to actually go out and play. I don't know what to make of it because it was Joe Flacco throwing him the ball. There was no time. Nate Herbig is snapping it up into the 15th row. I'm not going to make a big deal about something that in the long run really doesn't have a bearing, because that's not going to be the equation that he is playing into during the year.
That looked like me, by the way, snapping in our East-West freshman football game. I don't know if you remember that or not. I unfortunately do.
Did West recover that down near the school?
Down? No.
No, because that would have been me then that recovered that ball.
No, it was also a crazy Louis play, and I was actually supposed to get the pass.
Oh, I do remember that, yeah.
I blew that opportunity. But nevertheless, also, Joe Flacco should have learned, in that kind of situation, just fall on the ball.
I was waiting for him to run around and just yell, blow the whistle.
Or do a pop key. That is true. Look, Devonta Smith looked good. Ross Tucker thinks he's the next Isaac Bruce. Ross Tucker sucks, but that's okay. We've established that. Devonta Smith looked good. I just want to caution everyone, as you did as well. It was against the second team defense, but apparently you remember how in our four downs you were talking about the frustration you have over beat writers over tweeting every minutia, every single detail of every play during training camp practice. To me, it is the over-exaggeration of how people look, of how players look during the preseason game. And that is my issue with Ross Tucker. So what was the final score of last night's game?
It was 35-0 Patriots.
Okay. But if you had just listened to Ross Tucker without hearing the actual scoring plays, you would have thought that the Eagles were winning 35-0. And that every player is going to be a future All-Pro and everything else. I'm all for optimism, But it was just, you know, Devonta Smith, he reminds me of Isaac Bruce. Look at the way, the violent cuts, blah, blah, blah.
Well,
you know, I went to Princeton. Good.
A boxer, football player turned boxer, Chad Ochocinco, Chad Johnson, he agrees that he said what he sees out of Devonta Smith is unbelievable. Again, look, it's a cautionary thing here. It's
I'm not shitting on the guy. I actually look, I thought I was all excited for the Giants to take him, and God bless your team traded with the Cowboys in order to screw us. So you chose to work with the Cowboys in order to screw the Giants.
All I'm saying from an Eagles fan perspective is don't get too high or too low on what happened on Thursday night, both offensively, defensively, Devonta Smith, individual guys. I know it's weird. It just almost doesn't matter. Let's have this conversation again after Atlanta or week two or week three or week four of the NFL season. That's going to be a little bit more of a true gauge of where he is, Devonta Smith, Jalen Hurts is, and the team is.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But nevertheless, I thought he looked decent, and all in all, I thought that it was a piss poor performance by the Eagles.
Absolutely. I agree with you wholeheartedly. Let's move up the turnpike. Giants could be without three key offseason offensive acquisitions come week one. What did they just trade spots with the Colts?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we don't know about Saquon, how coy they're playing that one. It looks like Kyle Rudolph, who they were aware of a pre-existing foot injury when they signed him. They didn't have any offset language put into the contract, and now he hasn't trained all of training camp. We have no idea what his status is. Kenny Galladay hurt his hamstring and is still yet to run full speed. Actually, I could also throw in Kadarius Toney, who started training camp with COVID, came back, and now is dealing with some kind of, as they say, they're saying issue, but apparently it's a physical ailment, though no one is saying what it is. And none of them are playing, obviously, this Sunday against Cleveland. I think it is some cause for concern.
Let's go back to Kyle Rudolph. Now, that's interesting. I actually really like that signing from the aspect. If I was a Giants fan, I would like it because it gets rid of Schmuckface, who can't catch the football and costs people fantasy football championships. What's his name? Evan Ingram.
Yes.
So it makes sense. But they knew going in that the injury was there and just decided – Gettleman decided, whatever.
They knew going in, and he had offseason surgery upon signing with the Giants. But the recuperation is not going as planned, perhaps. I don't know. And we are in the situation we find ourselves in.
What is the injury?
Something with the foot.
What is going on with the foot?
It's the year of the foot.
It really is the year of the foot. Someone get the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and we'll figure this whole thing out.
Yeah, it's at least the summer of the foot.
Going back to preseason football, here we are. Why is it being played on a Sunday? Like, if we're going to do this, this is just me bitching and complaining now. Eagles played on Thursday night. That's traditionally, like, right? It's traditionally Thursday, Friday, maybe a Saturday in the preseason. But now we're getting, like, it's all over the place. Why can't we just come back to, like, one normal thing?
Well, it's probably because, like the players, the broadcast teams themselves need to have warm-ups. And so this was the allotted time, I'm assuming, for a Fox game. That's what the Giants-Browns 1 o'clock is, or CBS or Fox, whichever one. That, for instance, tonight of our recording, there's actually a Friday night ESPN game.
I got to tell you, that's great that there's a Friday night ESPN game. My eyes will be turned to TNT because it's clobbering time. Let's talk about let's go around the league real quick. Actually, I guess before we go around the league, some breaking news in the world of college football. I'm reading this right from The Athletic here. This is Nicole Auerbach, Big Ten, Pac-10, ACC Alliance, expected to be formally announced soon. According to sources, schools within the three conferences believe they are like-minded, that they want to continue to prioritize broad-based sports offerings, and that the academic profile of their institutions matter, as does graduating athletes. Holy shit, that's a That sounds like a shot at the SEC, if you ask me. The Big Ten, Pac-12, ACC are expected to make a formal announcement about their alignment, perhaps as early as next week. It's not clear how any of the specific what the specifics of this are, though. Interesting.
Yeah, it kind of just sounds like they all decided that they're going to be each other's square dance partners, and none of them will. The teams will not leave those conferences, and they'll always have, or at worst, that will end up being one of the super conferences.
I was going to say, it sounds like if there ever is a move towards a super conference, that would be one of them. Nicole Auerbach of The Athletic is calling this the Alliance. That's what she thinks the official name should be. I got to tell you, Nicole, and I'll tweet this at you from at the doc talk, that the doc underscore talks. Just go watch anything with the Alliance from 2001, WCW, ECW. You'll change your name super, super, super fast.
I think it requires a little bit more original thought.
Yeah, the triple threat.
Even then, still more original thought.
So this is going to be interesting now that is the direction those leagues are going to go. I did see earlier in the week when this rumor was kind of starting to circulate. So someone asked them about that because the commissioners are out there saying, yeah, we're talking. And they asked one of the commissioners, I believe it was the gentleman from the ACC. Have you had any conversations with the Big 12? And it was almost like a chuckle and a laugh, you know?
Yeah. Maybe how about the Pac Big? Never mind. I'm just
from a football aspect.
Yeah.
This is going to seal the northern half of the country is what's going to end up happening for the most part.
Yeah, I guess then I wonder if the southern ACC teams then jump ship.
The big thing, I mean, that's a good question. Again, we're going to come back to this. There is going to be the elephant in the room when talking about something like this. We'll run with what Nicole Auerbach is calling it, the Alliance. That's fine. This alliance of teams, this alliance of college conferences, they're down one in that group, and that's Notre Dame. I'm not saying Notre Dame is a game changer here, but if Notre Dame is in with this alliance as a whole, because every other sport is either in the ACC or hockey in the case of Big Ten in the case of hockey, then it really, really, that really solidifies what they're doing. I'm not a Notre Dame fan. People know that, but they're a name, right? When people think of college football as a whole, you say Notre Dame, they say, okay.
Wouldn't, by the transitive property, if there's an alliance between the Big Ten, the Pac-12, and the ACC, and there's an alliance between Notre Dame and ACC, ipso facto, there's an alliance between Notre Dame and the Alliance.
But we know that Notre Dame can do its own thing. The only reason Notre Dame went to the ACC a year ago was because of the COVID situation, and their rinky-dink schedule was falling apart.
Yeah, but you got to remember, they're a member of the ACC for other sports.
I know, but football, they are an independent, and they've always been independent status. It's just going to be interesting to see what happens there.
I guess there wasn't really enough clarification, too. Is this a football-only alliance?
No, they said all sports.
Okay, so because otherwise then I maybe call it the Falliance.
Sticking in the Midwest, while we're at it, let's go up to Wisconsin, little city on the lake, Green Bay. What in the green hell are the Packers doing with their alternate uniforms? You and I are uniform guys. I was real excited at first when I heard this, and then I yacked.
It was disgraceful. I don't even know if it's accurate to 1950s era Green Bay Packers. Why would you want to emulate an era in which the team sucked? Go back to the Vince Lombardi era Green Bay Packers and go to the navy blue uniform. Thank you. Case closed, solution, there you go.
As you're saying that, I'm actually going on the uniform database right now just to take a quick look at it because I really don't remember. I don't remember this look.
Well, that's because the Packers were so bad at that point. I don't even think there's any footage of them. It's after the Curly Lambeau, Don Hutson era, and it's prior to the Vince Lombardi era. They were terrible. They were the worst team in the league.
All right, yeah. So here we go. 1950 to 53. I mean, that's pretty bad.
Yeah, I don't get it.
I mean, that's really, really bad. I don't know. At least go to the yellow. Make it a little bit. If it's going to be bad, if it's going to be garish, at least do the yellow.
Yeah, to me, it just change it up a little bit. Just call it a color rush uniform, frankly.
Right. And, you know, even going back to, you say, oh, go back to the navy blue under Lombardi. According to the infographic, they last wore navy blue in 1954 to 1957. And that was more like, think of the United States Naval Academy. So and
what was it in 1960, from 1960 to 1968? Whatever that was.
It's a really, really dark green.
You know, I'm also kind of colorblind, so.
Yeah, no, because the you're right with the navy blue is that everyone said they wore navy blue. Now, there is navy blue and gold in their history, but it came earlier than that.
So then go to that dark green.
Yeah, look, go get away from whatever the hell you did. And that's this is just bad. This is awful.
Look, you take Aaron Rodgers, you make him look like Bart Starr. You don't make him look like Schmucko the quarterback from 1951.
Football fans wanted Kelly Green. I don't think this is what they were talking about.
No. This isn't Kelly Green. It's a little different. Also,
Sticking around the league, we're going to stick in the state of New York. Well, New Jersey first, I guess, technically speaking. Jets lose a key offensive addition, prize free agent acquisition, defensive end Carl Lawson, bam, torn Achilles. They got hit with another injury as well.
Yeah, a D-back tore his patella tendon. That's a shame. Carl Lawson is sort of an unheralded player because he was on the Bengals, but very good player. Jets had very high hopes for him, and unfortunately he will be out this season.
Sticking in New York, the state, we're going to go up Route 90, the thruway, for those who don't know it, to Brett's favorite team, the Buffalo Bills. Oh, boy, we got drama in Buffalo. Maybe they will be playing at Penn State in a couple years.
So permanently?
What's that?
Maybe permanently.
Yeah, I don't know about that. The Pegula family threatened. Well, yeah. Oh, so that's the connection. Remember how we were talking about why would the Bills pick Penn State? It made no sense.
The Pegulas are from Penn State.
Yes. So Terry Pegula, who is the owner of the Bills, he was the one that donated the $5 million to the Penn State ice hockey program to build the arena at Penn State. So he's a Penn State alum. So now, okay, that makes sense. That now I get the correlation.
Great. I'm no longer a Bills fan.
Yeah, it's right. So the Pegulas want out of Buffalo, potentially. They're threatening to leave the area if they do not get $1 billion for their new stadium.
Well, it's actually, they want public funding of their proposed stadium, which is over $1 billion. And they're going to build it, I guess, in the parking lot of the existing stadium. And their argument is it costs $1 billion simply to renovate the existing stadium. And then if they don't get it, they're gone.
So I was thinking about it. It's one of the older stadiums in the league. And I took a look at it. It was groundbroken in 1972. It opened August 17th, 1973, so 48 years ago. It was renovated in 1998, then again in 2013. So, yeah, it has the bones of a 48-year-old, but it was renovated in 13. That probably made it a bit more modern. You hear good things and bad things about this place. Like from a fan base perspective, fans like it. It's very good sight lines. You're close to the action. I don't know about amenities and all that kind of stuff, though.
Well, and I'm not speaking ill of Bills fans. I'm just sort of speaking reality. They mean, you know, they have tables. They break through the tables. So I don't know how many amenities they would need. But obviously, to keep up with current times, you need to have luxury boxes, things of that nature to capitalize on corporate money. And it's clear that stadium does not have that.
Yeah, just looking at it here. So they really are lacking some serious luxury locations. However, it's the design of the stadium is actually very, very similar to Lambeau Field. It's down in the ground. It's a bowl. You know, they could just simply here do a Lambeau treatment, which I always enjoy for some of these more old school stadiums, of putting luxury suites around the upper level.
I don't think it has the historical value to do that.
No, but you could do it. I mean, I guess that's where it comes in, where they're saying that's where your additional money is.
Well, if you're already at a billion, why not just do 1.5 billion and build a new brand new stadium?
No, I agreed. I understand wholeheartedly. It's going to be interesting. And now what's the argument? I mean, public funding for stadiums has been going on forever. It hasn't been till recently Jerry Jones kind of kickstarting the whole thing that it went privatized.
Yeah. I don't quite know what the entire issue is. Obviously, the state of New York is dealing with other things right now, in addition to everybody dealing with COVID. But, you know, in particular, there's very interesting things going on in New York. What's up?
Yeah, but that has nothing to do. That has nothing to do with the public funds available for infrastructure, they would argue this is.
No, I agree. Look, obviously, it would be a travesty if the Bills were forced to relocate from Buffalo, because it's a very passionate fan base.
It is a very passionate fan base. I'm taking a quick look here because the most recent large stadium in the state of New York built would have been New Yankee Stadium. It cost more than $2.3 billion to build. The Yankees supplied $670.6 million, and the rest came from public money.
Yeah.
Now, I imagine this is it's a little bit of a dance, right? It's going to be, we're going to leave. Well, why don't you give us $500 million and we'll supply the rest?
Well, I guess isn't it also a little bit of a dance because it's a smaller market? Yeah, you could call upon New York State taxpayers, but this isn't for something in the city of New York, which fair potentially enough. 20 million people could benefit from. It's only those up in upstate New York in that area, so it's less people. Then I guess you have the city and county tax base, which is also less than you would. I mean, it's probably even less than, you know, like Staten Island alone. So I'm really not a public finance. Actually, I know a public finance expert, but that is not me. So I can't really speak.
Yeah, I guess this
knowingly would come down, on this, but yeah,
I guess this would come down to Erie County, and I mean Orchard Park, New York. I'm looking at the statistics right now: 30,000 people. For those in the Delaware Valley, that's akin to Maple Shade, New Jersey. That's not that's not a lot of people.
Yeah,
interesting. So if they do go, so let's say the Bills, they say peace out, we're leaving. Let's do a little exercise here. Where could they end up?
St. Louis has a ready-made market.
I would agree. And a ready-made stadium for the short term.
Yeah, but they've had two teams leave.
Yeah, well, true. But so here's the way I look at St. Louis. Is it almost like a Winnipeg Jets type situation? The Cardinals left. Phoenix back in the day was courting everybody and anyone. There was a point where the Eagles were almost threatening to leave with Leonard Toews, right, to go to Phoenix. So I think it was only a matter of time before someone ended up there. In the case of the Rams, it came down to stadium issues.
Yeah.
So now, if in the case of, let's say, of the Bills, a new team, if they're willing to drop the money for the stadium, they were selling out the Trans World Dome or whatever the stadium's called now for the Battlehawks of the XFL.
Oh, yeah.
The fans want it. Now, could the fans drive it for a few years? Possibly.
Perhaps. It is a baseball town. And you've literally...
It's baseball heaven, baby. Don't you know? St. Louis, baseball fucking heaven.
I thought that's Iowa.
Oh, fuck Iowa, too.
What's wrong with Iowa? What's wrong with Iowa?
I don't know. No.
Again, I just, they literally have lost two. I feel like it's where franchises go to die, or just it's like a wayward station.
Okay, fair enough. I think the other spot that you always hear.
No.
Oh, is San Antonio.
No.
No.
I like the stadium, but no. And that's not a great stadium either, though.
It's a dump. It's an absolute hole.
Yeah.
Well, now Austin has all of a sudden come up as a potential landing spot for teams. They're not playing in the college stadium. That's 100,000 people.
I'm assuming they would initially.
But to me, it just doesn't make sense.
And you would always be playing second fiddle to the Longhorns.
Right, exactly. Where else, what other market out there would benefit from another team?
Portland.
Are we looking in the wrong place?
Portland?
That's Seahawks country.
I know, but they're really behind their soccer team, right?
Do they go to Oakland?
Or San Diego?
Fair enough. Are we looking in the wrong
country? No, Oakland's going to lose the Athletics. They lose everything, Oakland.
That's true, and you're going to build another stadium, publicly funded stadium in San Diego after already building a scaled down one for the college program.
So that's not going to happen. And if you finally capitulated and you built a stadium in Oakland, how stupid would it look if it's not the Raiders?
It would look completely stupid. Yeah. Are we looking in the wrong country?
No, this is the National Football, and I'm not being xenophobic. Particularly with COVID, we can't do that right now.
Well, this isn't going to happen tomorrow. Is Toronto a reasonable location for the Bills? They've already played home games there. They haven't built in fan base there. If the NFL was looking to expand internationally, it would make sense from a standpoint of, in a normal world, it's easy to get there. There's other pro sports teams. It'd be a 4-for-4 city.
Yeah, I think it'd be a little difficult. I'm trying to think of other Kentucky. No. Iowa, although you apparently don't like Iowa now.
There's nowhere else for it to go. There's really nowhere else for them to go.
Oklahoma City,
Omaha, Nebraska.
I feel like Nebraska's too much Nebraska Cornhuskers, and that's it. So you can't interfere with that. But Oklahoma's already a split state with Sooners and Oklahoma State Cowboys. So you can have one pro team to unite both communities.
Does Orlando slide in there? Is there enough
to how many? Yeah, it's too much in Florida.
I was going to say another team in the Florida. It's just a logical place. It has a stadium that has been renovated. It's ready to go. It has holds 60,000 people.
It does, but I don't think that that's too much. Too many cooks in the kitchen. I know Giant fans, food, rest, whatever, but too many cooks in the kitchen.
Is there anywhere else in the Northeast? Could they move, in theory, anywhere else in New York State?
Albany is still within New York.
I know Albany's within New York.
I'm sorry. I meant within the New York. It's not considered the New York City metropolitan region, but it's still within, like, Albany is New York Giants fans or Jet fans. It's New York City fans. You're not going to do Hartford because Connecticut is either Giant Jet country or Patriot country. Same thing. You can't do New England because that's New England.
It's interesting. It's interesting to see what's going to happen.
What about nothing? West Virginia, there's nothing. Fargo. Sioux Falls. Sioux City. I just switched states. Delaware.
Vancouver.
Vancouver and Toronto make the most sense from a Canadian perspective. And from a Mexican perspective, it would be Mexico City, except I would not want to play in that altitude.
You're already playing in that altitude in Denver.
It's beyond.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting.
It's double.
let's see what happens. It's going to be interesting to see what happens here.
Look, if it made Kane Velasquez's cardio bad, you think it'll make offensive and defensive linemen's cardio bad. Plus, you also have an issue with regards to it's unfair. I also think the same thing with Denver. Denver has an unfair advantage with respect to because players with sickle cell anemia can't even go there or with the sickle cell trait. Because there's that story with Ryan Clark or that issue that he had. So I would throw that out. Salt Lake City?
I don't think that they that's not a big enough market.
They had an Olympics.
You have to look at TV markets and where and points of destination too. Because if you're going to get a new stadium, it's going to be a place where you're going to hold a Super Bowl. In theory, right? That's what most of these places are looking for.
What is the largest city in the U.S. that doesn't have a football team?
You're asking me?
San Antonio.
Right. So, I mean, that's to me, if you're looking in the United States, San Antonio is probably the leader in the clubhouse. You probably have Orlando. I think that's it.
Well, and then Austin is right behind it. Austin has a lot more than Orlando. Then you have El Paso. Tennessee has a team. Baltimore definitely has a team. We're going to be talking about them in a minute. See, Louisville, Kentucky, 600,000. It's the 28th biggest market. Louisville actually has a bigger market than Portland.
If you're going to go that way, just go to St. Louis.
Yeah, but let's switch it up a little bit. Can another city have a second team?
No.
Like Chicago can't have a second
team. No.
There's no other cities that can sustain a second team.
Absolutely not.
You don't think so?
No.
What if they had hypothetically? What if somehow the Eagles? Hear me out. The Eagles said something and offended everyone in the northern section of Philadelphia, like Northeast Philadelphia. It turned them off. And Philadelphia gets a second football team for the North. And it's somewhere, they have a stadium somewhere.
Off the boulevard somewhere?
Off the boulevard somewhere. Do you think this city could embrace two teams?
If forever there was going to be a reason why, let's just say the Eagle, Northeast Philly and above, decides that they don't want to be Eagles fans anymore. And
I'm just picking Northeast completely randomly.
Yes, you are. Because
no, I'm not. I was just randomly.
Because if there were ever a fan base that like would work, it would be Bills Mafia going into Northeast Philly. And I say that in the most lovingly positive way that I can.
That's true. Maybe Harrisburg.
Let's talk AFC North. Let's preview the AFC North. We already talked about it. I don't think Pittsburgh, Cleveland, Cincinnati, or Baltimore is going to get a second team. I don't think they could support it. But we're going to preview perhaps one of the best divisions, including Cincinnati, in the National Football League.
So if I had to do a power rankings for divisions, which actually – we might be doing during our Sportswire Radio premiere episode, I would rank the AFC North currently second as the second best division in the NFL.
Who's your first?
Well, you're going to have to find out. Tune in to Sportswire Radio.
September 3rd, Sportswire Radio, our rankings of divisions. Well, let's get to this thing. We have our little formula here. The most important offseason acquisition, free agent or draft, in the AFC North.
So for me, I went with Najee Harris, the running back from Alabama, first round selection for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Pittsburgh Steelers, even though I think I think I could speak for you in this, neither of us really believed in the Steelers, despite the fact that they went on that undefeated run to start the season. Nevertheless, they did start that season, last season undefeated, and they won the division and made the playoffs, and they did all of that without any semblance of a running game. Towards the end of the season, they abandoned it completely. Ben Roethlisberger's throwing the ball 50, 60 times a game. Najee Harris is a super talented running back. He was a number one recruit. I believe he's Rancho Cucamonga, California, went to Alabama. Very talented, very skilled in the passing game, both in terms of blocking, skilled as a route runner, ability to catch the ball. And I think that it makes the Pittsburgh Steeler offense two-dimensional, which is super important.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. But then it comes down to, what are you going to do? Are you actually going to run the ball? Because it was working, right? So, interestingly here, I go Jackson Carmen, offensive tackle, Clemson. Going to Cincinnati. I'm not going Jamar Chase, which is there too. But we talked about it. We think that we both agree Cincinnati had a really solid draft. Solid. So, Jackson Carmen, here's the thing. You got to protect your guy. You got to protect Joe Burrow so that he can get the ball to Jamar Chase. If that works, watch out, because now the Bengals in their new-look uniforms, which are actually fairly decent after seeing them on TV.
Acceptable.
They are acceptable. They're kind of in the equation again. It's an oddball pick, but here's a guy from a draft aspect of you're bringing in a guy to protect your franchise.
Makes perfect sense. I like oddball. I embrace the left field picks. So
now whether he plays or not, I have no idea because I haven't been paying attention to Cincinnati.
Yeah.
But I'm looking at it as a whole. If you had to ask me, Jamar Chase would probably be a guy, but maybe the most impactful return is going to be Joe Burrow. Does he come back? That could be my X factor. I don't know.
Absolutely. Well, to be determined.
Moving on here, I'm working off two computers, and most impactful departure is who?
My most impactful departure, this was really close. I had two finalists who I want to talk about, but I'll rank that. To me, I have Bud Dupree, the outside linebacker from the Pittsburgh Steelers, over Orlando Brown, the offensive tackle for the Baltimore Ravens. Ultimately, I think it's more impactful in Pittsburgh, Bud Dupree's departure, because I'm not necessarily as comfortable with his replacements are unfinished or unproven commodities. Whereas in Baltimore, they then signed Alejandro Villanueva from Pittsburgh, who may not be as good as Orlando Brown, but I know what he is. Steady Eddie. Steady Alejandro, he's a good player. So that's why I have Bud Dupree over Orlando Brown.
Fair assessment. The Orlando Brown one was a little bit of a head scratcher when it occurred. It did make a little bit more sense when they signed Alejandro Villanueva. Baltimore is going to be an interesting squad when it comes down to that, because you have maybe a franchise quarterback. I don't know. They're a weird team. They're always very good. Their defense always leads them. They have a running back room that's okay. Gus Bus, I mean, is doing what he needs to do. Gus Edwards from Rutgers. But they were built on that line. Not so much anymore.
It was a little strange, you know, and on top of it, he wanted to play left tackle because he was replacing Ronnie Stanley. I guess it's obviously because he wanted to set himself up for a left tackle contract at some point.
Sure.
But in today's game, I almost feel as if a right tackle is just as important as a left tackle. I think financially there's still a difference.
Probably borderline. You look at a guy like Lane Johnson who got paid.
Yeah, I think that the gap is narrowed in terms of the relevance, in terms of finances and everything else.
Most talented position group in the division.
So whoever thought I would say this, to me it's a tie, and both of those positional groups are in Cleveland. So to me, I have the Cleveland offensive line, and I have the Cleveland running back room. The Cleveland offensive line, the starting line is Jedrick Wills, Joel Batonio, J.C. Treader, Wyatt Teller and Jack Conklin, that's as solid as you get. I mean, that's the reason why they're able to run the ball so well. But the other reason is because they have two of the best. They have the best running back combo in the league, hands down, in Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. That's as good as it gets.
That is really good.
Yeah. So, you know, it doesn't even matter who else they have. Then they picked up in this draft Demetric Felton, who I really liked. He was one of my sleepers. I still think can, you know, carve out a nice niche and have a successful career. So should be interesting with that. But, I mean, really, think about it. A few years ago, would you have thought, particularly in this division, that you'd say the most talented positional groups? Or you could even make an argument that it would be teams from or groups from Cleveland?
If they, I mean, Cleveland fans will tell you, yeah, because they sucked for so long. That was the point.
Yeah.
You made a fair, really good point on the offensive line. The running back room is one thing, but that offensive line, that's some maulers. So, no, Cleveland needs to take the next step. We'll get to that a little bit further on September 3rd on SportsWire, but they need to take the next step. That they're, you know, you're talking most talented. How about most worrisome group in the division?
To me, the most worrisome group is the Cincinnati Bengals offensive line. So, you know, I thought it was really interesting that you picked Jackson Carmen. It definitely is. It was a left field pick, but I understood the relevance. To me, at the time, I liked Cincinnati's draft. The one pick I didn't like was Jackson Carmen, because to me, I thought there were other guys still on the board that I liked better at the offensive tackle position. Nevertheless, it is an important acquisition because he is – when they drafted Ja'Marr Chase, they did so basically – it was either him or Penei Sewell. So they said, okay, we're going to pass on Sewell because we want Ja'Marr Chase. It was obvious to everyone that they're going to draft an offensive tackle in the second round because right now you have Jonah Williams who, you know, is coming off – his rookie year was an injury. Last year were decent, but decent at best. You have Quentin Spain, Trey Hopkins, Michael Jordan, and Riley Reiff. And that's not necessarily, an amazing line. I mean, their 2018 first-round pick was Billy Price, the center from Ohio State. He hasn't panned out. You know, they also drafted in the fourth round Dante Smith, an offensive guard/tackle. So it's clear they're trying to, you know, beef up that line, and we'll see how it comes. But and it, as you said, you got to protect Joe Burrow because they did not do that last year. It's why his leg started bending in eight different directions. That's the position group I'm most worried about.
Would it be fair to say that Pittsburgh has one of the worst position groups in the quarterback room? Now, everyone's going to say Ben Roethlisberger. We saw Ben Roethlisberger leaking oil, right? I mean, I get it. A lot of in baseball, they say you don't pay for a guy's past accomplishments. You pay for what he's going to do for you in the future. Ben Roethlisberger's future might not be much longer than the end of this year. So, and again, they have an opportunity to win. This is a very, very close division. So they have an opportunity to win. You got Ben Roethlisberger, you got Mason Rudolph. You have the Dwayne Haskins project, and right now their fourth stringer is Joshua Dobbs. If that guy's playing, Pittsburgh fans are looking forward to Penguins hockey.
Yeah, I think that it's a valid – you can make a very valid argument for it. Let's just say Ben Roethlisberger makes an appearance in one of my other answers, so I'll save that for that. But in terms of the rest of that room, you know, I don't think – Ben Roethlisberger's replacement is currently in the quarterback room. And I don't think that they found, you know, sometimes, look, I understand signing Dwayne Haskins. You know, you go bargain hunting, you see if you can find the diamond in the rough or, you know, repolish something that at one point was a very shiny car. But yeah, I don't think that Dwayne Haskins is going to turn out to be a viable starting quarterback in the NFL.
I would agree with you. Since you kind of gave it away, who's your X factor in this division?
So my X factor, it's the gas tank of Ben Roethlisberger. How much does he have left in the tank? To me, will dictate the competitiveness of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Whether you know, if he is the Ben of old, they could potentially win the division. if he, you know, bottoms out, falls off the cliff, I could see them finishing behind the Bengals. It really depends that much on how he does and his ability to, you know, sort of recapture the magic.
My X factor is kind of a twofold here. It is Joe Burrow. He is back. He is participating, but it's kind of a little bit of a Joe Burrow, but his offensive line, which we talked about. So you go get his college teammate that he throws touchdowns to left and right. However, if he's not on his feet and he's running around like a lunatic, he can't make those plays. The Bengals aren't far off that they could be a competitive team, borderline playoff team maybe, if you have that guy healthy. You know, interesting, we haven't said Baker Mayfield at all.
It's true. I mean, he is another huge X factor.
The way you got to throw Cleveland a bone here, and since we talked about how good their line is and how good their running back room is, you're only going to go as far as Baker Mayfield goes. Now, I like Baker Mayfield. I know a lot of people don't like his antics. I don't know. There's something about it to me. I kind of enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
But it depends what Baker you get.
I like Baker. I'm not in love with Baker. It's still wait and see. Let's see if they take that next step that you talked about earlier in the show.
We will break this all down September 3rd, Sports Wire Radio, sportstalkphilly.com. We'll be back next week to wrap up the weekend. So preseason week 2, we are going to be talking AFC East, which is a wide open division. A team might not be in their home anymore. Who knows what's going on? Teams are trading for quarterbacks possibly. Who knows? I don't know. Check out Michael's Glass Company if you need windows, shower doors, plate glass needs. 215-338-3293. If you're in Ardmore, you're on the main line. DePaul's Table, 7 East Lancaster Avenue, a modern Italian steakhouse. Follow us on all social at GL Stand Show, sportstalkphilly.com. We will see you later.